The following content is rated explicit for language in adult situations.
So listen with headphones.
Or don't. We don't judge.
Have you ever wished that your world had more magic?
Or that your favorite character had survived?
How about a full-length spin-off of your favorite childhood series?
Then do we have a podcast for you?
Hello, Fire Whiskers. I'm Claire.
And I'm Kat.
And this is Fire Whiskey and Honey, the podcast about your favorite novel-length Potter fan fiction.
The Debt of Time.
Each episode, we read a chapter of this story.
And try to stay on topic.
Which is easier said than done.
Without further ado, here's this week's chapter of The Debt of Time.
My child is just rolling around like a fucking crazy person, wearing a onesie that says Little Turkey, and it makes me really happy.
But, it's a day late, but okay.
Yeah, well, I'm mad at myself, because I wanted to feed him, have his first food be on Thanksgiving, because I thought that would be cute. And Thanksgiving holds a very special place in my heart, because in 2012... that was the year I decided to join the army, and my family was out of town, and that's when I started talking to recruiters. In 2013, I graduated from basic training the day before Thanksgiving, and so we got to spend Thanksgiving with our families, which was not the norm for people fresh out of basic training. You usually just get to see them on graduation day, and then you go off to your AIT training. So the fact that we got to spend 2 days with our parents was awesome. My cousin flew out and surprised us out there. So it was just awesome getting to wear human clothes and go have Thanksgiving dinner with my family after not seeing them or being able to talk to them on the phone or any of that. Because, I mean, I got to talk to them on the phone, but it was like very brief, like 2-3 minutes tops. So that was special. And then the following year really sucked because I got hurt and I found out I was getting out of the army because I had blown out my knee and had 2 concussions and was no longer deployable. Oh, and had pneumonia and got asthma as a result. So it was a really shitty year. But I went home and my parents didn't know I was coming home. And Kat, you remember
this. Yes, I know.
Because you picked me up at the airport. You picked me up at the airport. My parents thought I wasn't getting home until the beginning of December. They thought I was going to miss Thanksgiving. And I show up on their doorstep, I think it was like the Tuesday or the Wednesday before. And there's actually a video of it that I'll share to the Facebook page. And my neighbor had knocked on the door. She was recording it for me. And my mom opens it. She's like, hello. And I'm like, hi, mommy. And it was, yeah, and my dad's
my
just
favorite
standing
is your dad's face. It's like, I just saw a ghost. It's like someone famous came back from the dead. He's just like, what?
But anyway, no, it was so funny because my mom is like, oh, it's so good to see you, but you're such a stinker. Like, I can't believe you're here. How are you here? This is amazing. And my dad is just standing there in absolute shock and like doesn't say a word.
That's and my it's favorite.
Just it makes me sad because like the quality of the video has really deteriorated over the years, so it's so splotchy, but you can hear my mom and you can hear the joy, and it just makes me so happy. So like, I know Thanksgiving has sort of a bad rap these days, and as well it should due to its historical rewriting, but also I feel like a lot of it has sort of, you know, it's become less about, you know, pilgrims and the Native Americans and more about people taking time in an increasingly socially distanced world, an increasingly life lived on social media world, where we actually take a minute to come and be together and be in the same room and hopefully don't spend as much time on our phones except to take pictures of our plates, which is hilarious. Everybody shares it. Everybody eats the same stuff, but everybody's like, oh, yours looks amazing. It's great. I did that this year because
not everybody eats the same stuff. Some vegetarians out there don't eat turkey.
True. We were actually, my neighbors, they were on the fence. They were like, we might be going to family, but we might be staying here. And we're like, well, if you stay here, you know, you can eat with us. Well, she's a pescatarian. And so Jimmy, earlier this week, smoked a steelhead trout fillet. And I'm not a smoked fish person. Like, I hate lox. locks are not my friend. I've never been a fan. So when my husband was like, oh, you know that beautiful steelhead trout fillet that I got you that you were super excited about? I'm going to smoke it. I was like, best fucking fish I've ever had in my entire life. It was unbelievable. So he was going to do that for her. He smoked us a turkey, which was also phenomenal. And also took an hour longer than expected. So all of the sides were done and just sitting in the oven, but they all stayed warm. I made all of the sides and the pumpkin pie, which is a big deal because I don't cook. My husband is the cook. My husband said everything was good. The only thing I fucked up, we got rolls, just like sweet Hawaiian rolls, and I brushed butter on top and I sprinkled a little salt. I put too much salt on top of the sweet Hawaiian rolls. That was the only food I fucked up. But I am proud because this was our, we've been together for 5 years, 5 Thanksgivings, and the first two were spent with his family. Third one, he was in Afghanistan, so we had a like mini Thanksgiving, which was basically just me making a turkey breast and mashed potatoes before he went to Afghanistan. And then that year I just kind of spent it sort of sad and hungover. The next year we did with friends of ours. The following year we did with my parents. And I feel like, no, this is the 6th Thanksgiving? Because I feel like that was 6. 2 in Jersey, 1 in Afghanistan, 1 with friends, 1. Yeah, this was Thanksgiving number 6. Oh, look at that. Anyway, but yes, this was the first year that we have ever spent it at our house. So, like, that was exciting. And it was the first year that we actually got to cook at all. Because, well, no, he used to fry the turkeys at home. But, like, usually other people cook. So it was very nice and it was very quiet. And it was just us and JD and Max. And it was wonderful. So, also, for those of you listening, now that we're fucking, like, God knows how long into recording. Yesterday was Thanksgiving. We have not recorded in 6 weeks because, of course, Hannah Beth had her baby. And I was going to do a shout out to her and baby Colin on the AO3 chapter. And then I was like, no, she hasn't announced it yet because he was freshly baked and out of the oven at that point. So I just want to take a second to say congratulations, Hannah Beth, and welcome to the world, little Colin. And Kat would like to say.
Ditto what Claire said.
Good with words, as always.
I'm awkward. Yes.
And that's fine. That's why we love you. That's why you have such a large fan base. All right. So, that being said, previously on Fire Whiskey and Honey. So, last season, very exciting, lots of things happening. Kat, do you remember any of them?
Yeah, I skimmed it before we started recording, and I think I get the gist of it, but I could be wrong.
That's fine, let's give the gist, and then I will offer corrections as needed.
Okay.
If needed.
So, yeah. So, I guess Harry got his first broom, because it was his birthday. Yes. And I'm just like, I think he's still a toddler, but okay. Let's give him a broom. Cool. And then it kind of seemed like, I guess this is when Sirius stopped being the secret keeper and it went to Peter. Mm-hmm. So then we get into the whole Peter messes up and betrays people. So I think his parents might have died at the end of this because there was because there was that one section where Peter was, like, in the crowd of muggles and he was safe for now, so I guess he's, like, on the run or something, and Sirius has a little moment with Hagrid because he's all sad, like, how could I have let this happen, and, like, all that, feeling all that guilt, and then I think there was, like, some kind of, like, what was it, like, some kind of flashback or something to Hermione telling him to always trust Remus. Because she kept telling him to always trust him, so I guess that was a flashback, because we obviously know that she's somewhere, even though my theory is that she is a baby. But anyways, so he has that flashback to her telling him to trust Remus, and then, obviously, Harry's parents die, and Peter's a butt nugget,
And I think Sirius is in Azkaban, or is he out of
Azkaban? He's in Azkaban.
Okay, so he is in Azkaban right now. Okay.
Yeah. So, in the last chapter...
Oh, also, yes. Isn't he also feeling some type of guilt about giving Hermione the time turner in the first place? Like, isn't he feeling kind of like,
no.
Why did I even do this? Yeah.
Okay, so there's a lot of complicated emotions.
Yeah.
So... At the beginning of the last chapter, so the last season involved Maya and Sirius getting serious, Sirius deciding that he was going to propose. Sirius met Maya's dad at a pub and offered him congratulations because he was about to have a little girl. And while Sirius is at the pub, because he's at the pub because he and Maya had a fight, because she had found the time turner and she started freaking out and he thought it was because she didn't want to marry him. So she calls Remus. She tells Remus what's going on. She goes somewhere. She disappears. There's a blue light. And then Sirius gets a Patronus from her where she's like, Sirius, I love you, I'm sorry, and it cuts off in the middle. He comes back, finds her gone, punches Remus because Remus won't tell her where she is. The Order kind of investigates, quote unquote, but then they're like, never mind, she's dead, stop looking. Lily gets pregnant with Harry. Lily has Harry. Sirius becomes godfather, gets Harry the broom. And then in the final chapter, that's when we get the letter from Lily to Sirius saying, you know, thank you for the broom, all that kind of stuff. You know, yada, 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 yada. Life is good. Something about Grindelwald and Dumbledore being friends. And then, Sirius confronts Remus asking, you know, what the secrets are. Remus won't tell him, so they have a falling out. And there's this huge fight. They don't trust each other. Lily and James are trying to get them to reconnect. And they're like, well, let's have them reconnect at Christmas. But first we have to get through Halloween. And of course on Halloween, that is when they die. So that scene opens with Sirius jumping on the motorbike, which of course we all recognize from the first movie and book where Hagrid rides the motorbike from Godric's Hollow to Little Whinging to bring Harry to Dumbledore. Sirius runs up the stairs of the destroyed house, passing by the dead body of James, and he sees Lily's dead body, and he's like, give me my boy. I had a fucking breakdown. And then Sirius asks Hagrid to keep Harry safe so he can go find Peter. Because he thinks that Peter is dead. Because that's usually, if the Fidelius charm fails, it's because the secret keeper died. And that's when he started having the flashbacks that you mentioned. Sirius said, or he hears Maya saying, I just mean Peter and I aren't close like I am with the pair of you. I don't know. I don't trust him. Why shouldn't they let him into Hogwarts? Peter, should they have cast him out? Maybe even locked him up like an animal? What would be next, Peter? Round up all the Muggleborns? And then Sirius saying, hey, that was a Marauder secret, Remus. You're the worst secret keeper ever. And Maya goes, he's not. In fact, Remus should always be your secret keeper. Always trust Remus. Forever trust Remus. Don't trust Peter. Always trust Remus. Never trust Peter. Bah, 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 bah. And they do all of these flashbacks, and then Sirius realizes what the fuck happened. He confronts Peter. And he realizes that Peter killed Mary. Sorry, guys. I know this is a really long flashback, but I'm trying to skim through the chapter real quick. So Peter's moving through the streets of London because he's obviously trying to stay under the radar. Sirius arrives because Sirius had a teleport key in Peter's pocket so that if Peter got kidnapped, he could find him. So super useful. And again, Shia setting seeds chapters and chapters and chapters ago for a very big scene, which we all would have assumed would have been Can You Swim? But no, in fact, it is this, where Sirius finds Pettigrew and he's going to try and take him. And Peter does the big explosion, cuts off his finger, turns into a rat, and goes down the gutter. Orrs come, they arrest Sirius, and he's laughing maniacally, saying that it's his fault. It's all my fault. I killed them, I killed them, I killed them. And everybody's like, oh, well, he's just admitting his guilt, when in reality, he's the one who made Peter the Secret Keeper. And then Remus finds out that Harry has been orphaned, and he thinks that Sirius is at fault, and ends with, oh, Remus is trying to get Harry, and Dumbledore is like, yo, can't, gave him to Vernon and Petunia. And Remus is like, well, that's a shitty decision. And Dumbledore is like, sex to suck, bro. Cheers. And then at the very end, he hoped Sirius was suffering in Azkaban. Remus, I love you. Maya's last word to him came into his mind, washing over him with a strange, unsettling guilt. You're my best friend, and I love you. Please take care of him. Remember what I said. Trust Sirius, always Sirius. I promise. Why had he promised her such a thing? Why had he put the time turner around her neck? It changed everything. It ruined everything. Remus was certain that in trying to save her, he had ruined the future she had come from. Remus thinks that by sending her off to wherever it is she's going, that somehow he screwed up the timeline and made Sirius a bad guy. So he thinks that Sirius did it. Because nobody told anybody, not Dumbledore, not Remus, that they had swapped from Sirius to Peter. Because they didn't want anybody to be able to squeal. So, sorry guys, that was really long. Very rambly recap. But exciting, because we are now at chapter 101. Do you have any questions or predictions before we go into this season? Where do you think we're going to pick up? Like, what year? Like, what era?
I hate it when people ask me these questions, because I get that you're curious, and for a normal person, that would be, like, a legit question. But I have absolutely no freaking clue.
Do you think we're going to pick up with wherever Maya went, or do you think we're just going to pick up where we left off?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you don't know, because I assumed we would pick up wherever Maya had gone, and I was sorely disappointed. So, because we were going to pick up on July 18th, 1990. But, that being said, there's an author's note, so we're going to start with that. Also, I'm using the dyslexia font, so maybe I won't skip over words as much.
Isn't it the best? It's so big and nice.
It makes the chapters look a lot longer, but that's fine. All right. Author's note. I have to tell you how much your reviews over chapter 100 meant to me. I was worried initially about book 3, but getting so many comments and PMs about your excitement has calmed my fears. Also, about 95% of your scene requests have already been written. For those wondering just how long part 3 will be, I can't say just yet. I'm about halfway through Order of the Phoenix right now and writing chapter 118. There's still a Half-Blood Prince, and I'll also fill in a few gaps from Deathly Hallows, or, in DOT speak, book 1, The Life Debt. Book 3 will cover Hermione's original years at Hogwarts, as well as catch up with Sirius and Remus. I've tried to do a lot of scenes that weren't in the canon books, because copying and pasting JKR's words is tedious. Some scenes I couldn't ignore, so there's a bit of an overlap. I did try to rewrite things in my own words to make it feel like it's all one voice. I hope it works. For my chapter reference fanatics, reread chapter 19, as well as Sorcerer's Stone's chapters 5, 6, and 8. Chapter 101. Belong. Crap. What was the name of book 3? You didn't tell me the name of book 3! Anyway. Chapter 101. Belong. July 18th, 1990. Keeping in mind that I believe Sorcerer's Stone picks up in 1991. I believe that's when Harry turns 11, maybe. Yes, because he's born in 1980, so he turns 11 in 91, so this is when he's 10 years old. Or about to turn 10 years old. Several streets from Charing Cross Road, where the Leaky Cauldron was nestled snugly between a bookshop and a record store, sat a small, lovely house with a blue door and cream-colored curtains hanging in the windows. Inside the charming home, Richard and Helen Granger sat around their dining room table, smiling as their soon-to-be 11-year-old daughter attempted to eat her breakfast. porridge with blueberries instead of raspberries, with one hand, while holding a book in the other, her chocolate brown gaze glued to the pages. "What do you want for your birthday, Hermione?" Helen asked her daughter. "Only 2 months away." "Books, please," Hermione responded, her voice slightly monotone, as she carefully turned the page of her novel in her hand, her attention entirely taken up by the story.
"Always books," Richard said with a laugh, making eye contact with his wife, who only shook her head in amusement.
As he stood and began clearing away the dishes, Richard went to reach for Hermione's empty bowl, only to find it missing from the table. He blinked several times in confusion, and turned to the kitchen where he saw the small dish already sitting in the sink. He paused for several moments, trying to remember if he had already taken his daughter's empty bowl, or if he had seen his wife or child stand up from the table at any time in the last few minutes. He tried to brush off the confused feeling, but it was getting harder and harder these days when strange things occurred in their home more often. The first time Richard thought he saw something peculiar occur, Hermione had only been a toddler. She'd been going through an attachment phase and cried every morning when her father had to leave for work. It just so happened that when she could not be consoled, he would suddenly lose his car keys, only to find them in her crib. After the fifth day in a row that this happened, Richard decided to take the tube to work. After so many years of strange occurrences, Richard Granger might have thought himself mad, or at the very least suffering from some sort of neurological problem. But, thankfully, if he could truly be thankful for such a thing, his wife experienced similar oddities. Neither could figure out what was happening, nor did they wish to follow the rabbit hole so far as to land on the cover of a tabloid talking about haunted houses and alien sightings, especially since all strange happenings in or out of their home had a common factor. Hermione. Instead, they merely agreed that their child was special, and quietly left it at that. And special was an understatement. Pulled from his thoughts by the rapping on the front door, Richard looked at his wife.
"Expecting someone?"
"Not this early," Helen said, as she stood from the table, affectionately smoothing down Hermione's bushy brown hair, as she moved past her. A part of her hoped that the locks would move past this frizzy stage quickly. She knew that the other children in Hermione's class teased her about her hair. It didn't help that her front teeth were overly large as well, but both Richard and Helen had agreed that braces could wait.
"I feel lied to. Because you asked me if we would continue where we left off or be where Hermione is. This is where she is. She may not be a baby like I said, but she's still a kid. Okay, so yes, I feel lied to."
We're picking up with Hermione, yes.
Oh my god, so because they're two different people, oh my.
She has to be Hermione first before she can go back and become Maya. Get ready to be annoyed, because the original Hermione voice is coming back, which is basically the same as Maya's voice, but less, like, hang easy and a little more stick up the bum.
Shia, I say this with love. I don't like you right now. I don't like you.
And Shia is just like, the anger and tears of my readers. I touch it into my face and it keeps me youthful. For serious, though, I have more wrinkles than she does. It's not fair. Also, okay, quick sidebar because we're talking about things that annoy me. My husband accidentally ruined Christmas yesterday. He was like, "Hey, out of curiosity, how much did you spend on Christmas?" Because he knows that I like going all out on holidays, and he's usually an everyday kind of guy. So, like, I go big on Christmas and birthdays, and he's the kind of guy who, every time he goes to the grocery store, he brings me back, like, a treat. He'll bring me back Reese's, he'll bring me back ice cream that I mentioned that I've been craving. Like, he's an everyday gift kind of guy. I'm a couple times a year big gift person. Two very different kind of gift people. So usually he feels kind of bad because I'll go all out for Christmas and he hasn't, and then he feels like he needs to make up for it, and it's not a competition, but you still have that feeling. Anyway, he apparently went kind of all out this year and wanted to make sure that I didn't feel bad if I had not gone all out as well, because obviously we have a new baby that throws, you know, a wrench in the plans. So I told him a number and he goes, "Nice, Apple Watch." And my eyes just kind of started to fill up with tears. And he goes, oh God, oh God, no, no, it's okay though, because like, I'm not going to be able to guess the rest of them. It's not like you got me baking stuff this year. Because I always get him kitchen stuff. And then I started to cry harder. And he's like, oh God, I'm sorry. But I mean, like, it's not something easy to guess. It's not like a proofing basket and the thing to cut the bread with. And I just like broke down on the floor. And he's like, oh God. I'm like, you guessed all of them. That's all your presents. That's all I got you. An Apple Watch, a proofing basket, and a lame or a lame or whatever the fuck you call it. And he was like, oh God. And at this point, I'm like, why did you keep guessing? And he's like, I'm sorry, I didn't expect to be right. So really, we both have the same problem. It's hereditary through marriage. But anyway, so he ruined Christmas. And then he offered to let me know what he had gotten me. And of course, at that point, I'm like, no, I want to be surprised. So, my breakfast this morning may or may not have been a large Ferrero Rocher Christmas ornament that's like the size of two of my hands. It's bigger than my fist. And you open it, it looks like a Christmas ornament. You open it up and it's just a giant Ferrero Rocher. It doesn't have the interior in it, which frankly is my favorite part of the Ferrero Rocher, but it's just a giant ball of chocolate with hazelnuts. And it's so good. But I just needed to share that because my husband ruined Christmas. But I am looking forward to what he got me. Should be fun. Also, he didn't guess what JD got us. Quotes. Oh, also, and as punishment, because my husband doesn't listen to this show, so he'll never know. As punishment for guessing all of his Christmas gifts, he is getting socks. He's getting two pairs of socks. One has a picture of our child's face, the other one has a picture of our dog. I did not get him the boxers with my face. That'll probably be for his birthday. But that is his punishment now. He wants to guess all his presents.
I like the ones that you can get in the certain area and you do the I like those. I think that's funny.
Yeah, I'll just take a picture with me with my tongue out like yeah, and just like put that all over his boxers. But anyway, the dead of time.
Well, hopefully you like what I got you because you were no help when I asked you what you wanted.
I had no fucking clue what to get. My brain was shot this year. The only, like, Jimmy was easy to shop for this year because he broke his Apple Watch. And I was like, perfect. I'll get him an Apple Watch. But, like, I don't know what to do anymore. I used to be such a good gift giver, but I also never leave my house. You know what? I'm going to go to a store and I'm going to find cute stuff for you that you can't get on the internet. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to shop small.
Yeah, I feel the same way because I used to be really good at gifts and I'm like, I don't know anymore. Like, I feel like I've gotten you people everything I could ever think.
So, for those of you who follow the OG Fire Whiskey and Honey group, and I feel like I would like to start sharing them maybe with the podcast group, my best guy friend, who is JD's godfather, Blaze, not his real name. He is named Blaze because he is similar to the Blaze character that everybody seems to write in fan fiction, who is sort of irreverent, very witty, has very first world problems, has lots and lots of money and no children, with zero desire to ever have children. And is not a big fan of children, but seems to like my child. Blaze recently, I think it was supposed to be a Christmas gift, but it just happened to come in the middle of, at the beginning of November. Blaze apparently really liked Calvin and Hobbes growing up. It was his favorite comic. And so he got JD the complete collection. And he said it was out of print. And I'm like, this isn't out of print. I saw it in a bookshop the other day. He got him a first edition. Because of course he did. So actually that's right there. You guys can't see it. Cat can't. But that's the first edition of Calvin and Hobbes right there on my bookshelf now. That is on a high shelf and my child will not touch until he is 30. And it's in phenomenal condition. But for Christmas, he got me a gift. And it was a gift card. And it's a very nice gift card. And it was to Latched Mama. And I was like, don't get me wrong. This is an extremely awesome, excellent gift, and I'm very excited to spend it. But how the fuck do you, Mr. I have no interest in children whatsoever, know about a clothing boutique that is designed specifically for breastfeeding mothers? And he goes, despite my consistent reassurances that I have zero interest in their breastfeeding journey or their children, my female friends have assured me that this is a very nice place to get things. And I'm like...
It's like Superman.
Yes. Yes, but I'm very excited to... Because the other thing is I've never shopped there because I'm like, it's kind of expensive for a nursing top that I'm only going to wear for a year. And like, you know, I'll wear it again if we have another kid. But like, it's a lot of money to wear for something that I'm not going to wear all that. Yeah, now I can spend it and not feel bad about it because it's not my money. But anyway, I should share Blaze things. Blaze is wonderful. You guys would love him. But actually, we should find a story. We should have you read my Blaze story. That'll be one of the AO3 things. It's not sexy time kind of story, but it is funny. And it was based on actual conversations that Blaze and I had regarding my pregnancy when I first found out. And yes, I did write myself as Hermione, so get fucked, guys. I don't care. But anyway. Dead out of time. We're going to have a lot of tangents. We haven't recorded in 6 weeks. Kat and I haven't talked much, and it's the beginning of the new season. And in case you were missing the taskmaster voice of Hannah Beth, who keeps us in line, keeps us on point, keeps us where we are in the paragraphs, and reminds us to continue recording and stop tangents, she is enjoying maternity leave, and we are going to let her enjoy that. But I will also stop tangenting so that her editing is easier while she's doing it with a newborn. So, anyway, it's a dead of time. Helen opened the front door with a smile, half expecting their neighbor, Mrs. Smythe, to come looking for her lost cats again. The pesky little beasts had a habit of finding their way into their house, specifically Hermione's bedroom. Just another quirk in the lives of the Grangers. When the door fully opened, Helen didn't see Mrs. Smythe looking for her cats, but she saw, instead, an older woman with black hair pulled back into a tight bun, square spectacles covering stern but kind eyes, wearing a strange-looking black and emerald dress with a hemline that swept the ground. Helen Granger. Oh, God. Oof. No, I don't remember what my McGonagall voice was.
Don't look at me. I can barely remember what I had for breakfast yesterday.
Yeah, because now all I can hear in my head is Mrs. Doubtfire. Hello!
Helen Granger. Yes, may I help you? Actually,
fuck, this is just going to be a wreck, guys. I'm just going to power through this, and if it's fucking terrible, I'm sorry.
Actually, I'm here to be of service to you, my dear, the woman said with a polite smile. My name is Minerva McGonagall, and I'm a professor and deputy headmistress for a very exclusive and special school for gifted children. I've come today to speak to you about your daughter, Hermione.
Elsewhere in the home, Hermione stood in the front of a bathroom mirror after brushing her teeth, grumbling a bit at the reflection as she attempted to pull her overly thick and bushy hair back into a hair tie that snapped after one twist. She angrily threw the broken hair tie in the bin, feeling static electricity running through her unmanageable mane. As she made her way back to the dining room to fetch her book from the table, she heard the sound of her mother screaming and, in a fit of reckless courage, went running to see what had happened. She came into the living room to see her mother and father clutching one another desperately, staring wide-eyed at a small tabby cat sitting on the couch in front of them.
"What happened?" Hermione asked. "Is that another of Mrs. Smythe's cats?"
She looked at the small animal that seemed different.
"I told her I wasn't stealing them. They just like me," the little girl said with pleading eyes, not noticing the way her parents were now staring at her as though she'd grown a tail of her own. "What's wrong?"
Then, right before her eyes, the cat on the couch transformed itself into a tall woman with black hair. Hermione gaped at the sight, though, instead of the fear that her parents were displaying, Hermione felt excitement and wonder bubbling up inside of her.
"I knew it! I knew magic was real!" she said, heart racing. "Are you a shape changer from Homona like my books?"
She rushed to the dining room table and pulled off of it the small novel she had been reading that morning.
The older woman stared down at Hermione, looking at her with a similar expression that her own parents were using as they gawked back at the stranger. Hermione got the distinct impression that she was at a loss for words, uncomfortably so. Eventually, the woman looked at the book in Hermione's hand and her brows furrowed. No, my dear. I'm not a shape-changer from wherever you mentioned, she said, clearing her throat. I'm a witch from Scotland. A witch? Hermione dropped her book onto the coffee table, turning expectantly to the woman, ignoring the strange way her mother was squeaking. Like Glinda from the Wizard of Oz? Or the White Witch from the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe? Or the Three Witches from Macbeth? Or Circe? Or Nimue? Or Morgan Le Fay? The woman. The witch, Hermione corrected, and gazed at her for several long moments before answering. No, 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 followed by yes, yes, and yes. Though considering your current taste in reading material, she continued, eyeing the book on the table, I doubt you've heard of the latter three in a proper, historically accurate context. Do you read anything other than fiction? Yes, ma'am, Hermione replied excitedly. I read anything I can get my hands on. Good. The woman reached into her robes, removing a small box. She then pulled out a long piece of wood and waved it over the box, which magically enlarged. Then I have something for you. An early birthday gift, my dear. Hermione took the box gratefully and opened it. There, nestled inside, was a book. Hogwarts, a history. Hogwarts, a history, she read aloud. Tucked inside the front cover of the book was a cream-colored envelope with green writing. She looked down at it and smiled, running her finger over the scripted lettering across it that read, Miss Hermione Granger, first bedroom on the second floor, 146 Volpe Drive, London, England. I love that her street name is it's Volpe or Volpe. It's V-U-L-P-E. And that's similar to Volpine, which is fox-like. So that's fun. She quickly opened the letter with excitement and read the inside. Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Headmaster, Albus Dumbledore. Order of Merlin, First Class, Grand Sorcerer, Chief Warlock, Supreme Mugglewump, International Confederacy of Wizards. Dear Miss Granger, we are pleased to inform you that you have been accepted at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Please find enclosed a list of all the necessary books and equipment. Term begins on 1 September 1991. We await your owl by no later than 31 July. Yours sincerely, Minerva McGonagall, Deputy Headmistress. An hour later, Richard and Helen Granger were visibly much calmer as they asked Minerva McGonagall as many questions as possible. Hermione, as predicted, asked more. Minerva assured them that they had another year to think about whether or not to send the girl to the magical boarding school in Scotland, and the Grangers, save for Hermione, seemed to be pleased that they had time to process the news of having a muggle-born witch. After a polite conversation over tea, Minerva rose from the sofa, said farewell to Hermione, who immediately rushed off to her room to read her new book, and then turned to say goodbye to the Grangers. I have one last question I hope you might be able to answer, she said, as she stepped through the front door. Does the name Maya Potter mean anything to you? No, Helen said, shaking her head. Should it? I don't think so. A former pupil of mine, Minerva said with a tight smile. Your daughter reminds me very much of her. She was bright and eager to learn, though your Hermione appears to be a great deal more polite, she said pointedly, recalling far too many detentions with the young witch and her marauder entourage. The former pupil of mine, Maya, has a nephew who will be attending Hogwarts next year as well. I imagine he could use a good friend like your girl. Minerva made her way back to Hogwarts via apparition to the Leaky Cauldron, and then a quick flu trip into Albus Dumbledore's office. She stood in front of the large desk, arms folded, and the crossest look on her face that she could possibly summon.
Good morning, Minerva.
Albus smiled, blue eyes twinkling.
Lemon drop?
No, I do not want a bloody lemon drop, the older witch hissed. Would you care to inform me as to why I stumbled upon a rather interesting coincidence this afternoon?
That depends on the coincidence.
The coincidence I speak of is the fact that the young muggle-born witch I met today bears a striking image resemblance to that of a former student of mine. I imagine the name Maya Potter rings a bell.
If he tried to hide the brief flash of guilt, he didn't do it very well, and Minerva caught it immediately.
Albus, Explain yourself right this minute, or I swear to Circe, I will transfigure you into a newspaper and set you beneath Fox's perch. She huffed. Is it really her? How?
Albus nodded, and then simply said,
Time Turner.
Minerva gasped. So, is she Hermione Granger, or is she Maya Potter?
Both. Though at this moment in time she is merely Hermione. One day in the future, I imagine the two will converge into one.
Merlin, help me if that day should ever come.
She groaned, and then collapsed into the chair in front of the headmaster's desk.
This girl has quite a bit less attitude than Miss Potter. How will this work, Albus? If I was able to recognize her, even with the subtle differences, what about the other people who knew the girl? Poppy, Pomona, Phileas. Merlin, what will we do about Severus? Do you know how often I had to put that little witch in detention for striking him? And now he's to be her professor. He's already known for having a sour disposition with the students.
Perhaps a subtle notice me not would do the trick, Dumbledore suggested with a smile.
Jesus.
You're smiling, which means you're having thoughts.
They're cousins. They're identical cousins. No. Jesus. What? Oh, my God. What?
So in book one, we knew Hermione, right?
Yes.
She was born to Helen and Richard. She grew up with Harry Potter, and then she went into the past and became Maya Potter, yes. Which, of course, is how McGonagall knows her. But as of right now, she's still just Hermione. She doesn't become Maya until she goes in the past.
Yes.
So, we're stuck with Hermione. Also, my child is awake but quiet. He may put himself back to sleep. I'm hoping he does. If not, well, we're just going to keep reading. And oh God, we're not even halfway through. July 31st, 1991. Hermione Granger joyfully followed behind Professor McGonagall as she was led through the wizarding shopping district called Diagon Alley. After setting up an account at Gringotts Wizarding Bank, they began collecting all of her books, and, to Hermione's delight, there were so very many. A cauldron, potion supplies, inkwells and quills, and even an entire wardrobe of robes that Professor McGonagall explained would change in color once she had been sorted into a specific house.
Professor, would it be all right if I went back into Flourish and Blotts? Hermione pleaded. There were just a few extra books that I thought I could read in my spare time, or at least between now and September 1st.
Professor McGonagall looked down at the girl thoughtfully.
Certainly, Miss Potter. I need to step into the magical menagerie to pick up a few things for my cats, unless you'd think you'd like a familiar now.
Hermione shook her head.
I doubt I'll have much time to look after a pet, what with all of the studying I'll need to do. I have so much to catch up on already, an entire history of the wizarding world that I was never taught because I'm muggle-born.
Being muggle-born is nothing to be ashamed of, Miss Granger. I can see a bright future for you.
When Hermione beamed up at her, Professor McGonagall cleared her throat.
Now, we'll meet at the magical menagerie in 10 minutes or so. Yes?
Thank you, Professor.
Hermione smiled and turned towards the bookshop just as Professor McGonagall stepped away. A slender, beautiful blonde moved quickly past Hermione on the right, her feet gracefully carrying her as she sped away from the bookstore. Her bright blue eyes looked back once, her mouth set in a tight line of impatience.
Draco, hurry! Your father has a meeting later, and I've promised him that we'd be done by then.
What about my robes?
A boy behind Hermione asked.
Fine, run off to Madame Malkin's and have her charge the account. Your father's inside getting your books, and I'll meet you at Ollivander's.
The boy's mother called back to her son. Hermione turned around to follow the woman's gaze, but as she moved, she collided with something and lost her balance.
Ow!
Shouted the voice of a young male. Hermione looked up into the pale, pointed face with silver-gray eyes narrowed menacingly at her.
Oh, I'm sorry, she mumbled, shocked by the way the boy sneered at her. Watch where you're going,
the blonde snapped and shoved her out of his way. Hermione tripped forward. She tried to recover her balance, but fell to the cobblestone road, her knees and palms scratching against the rough surface of the street. She watched the blonde boy storm away towards Madame Malkin's.
Rude?
Oh, fuck. Hermione sniffled and looked down at her skinned knee, frowning as a few other people in fancy robes passed her by. She reached into the bag she'd obtained from the robe shop earlier, using the edge of one of the black sleeves of the robe to dab the blood away from her cut before shoving everything back in and standing up. No longer wanting to head back into the bookshop, Hermione turned around to move towards the magical menagerie where she was to meet Professor McGonagall. Eyes on the ground in dejection, she did her best to navigate the unfamiliar street while catching bits and pieces of conversations happening around here.
"Listen, Harry, would you mind if I slipped off for a pick-me-up at the Leaky Cauldron? I ate them Gringotts carts."
It was incredibly odd to hear such foreign shops referred to so casually, and Hermione wondered if she would ever feel like she belonged amongst the witches and wizards, or if she would always feel a bit out of her element. She turned once more, losing her way as she walked past Madame Malkin's, and again found herself on the ground after being run into by another boy. She growled as her books scattered around across the cobblestones.
"Sorry," a kind voice spoke above her.
"It's all right. I'm starting to think it's just me," she commented with a sigh as she gathered her things.
She stood up, dusting off her clothes and smiling when a hand held out her dropped copy of A History of Magic.
"Thank you."
The skinny black-haired boy in front of her nodded awkwardly, smiled at her, and then, without another word, walked into the robe shop behind her. Hermione's gaze followed him, smirking slightly at the way his hair stuck up straight in the back.
"At least some people here are nice," she said to herself.
After a short lunch at the Leaky Cauldron, Professor McGonagall and Hermione made their way to a narrow, shabby-looking shop ahead of them. Peeling gold letters over the door read, "Ollivanders, makers of fine wands since 382 B.C. Hermione smiled brightly at the sign as they entered the shop.
"Good afternoon," Ollivander smiled as he approached the counter,
glancing down at the little witch and then looking up at Professor McGonagall.
"Professor, always a pleasure. You won't believe who came into my shop not 10 minutes ago," the older wizard said excitedly.
"I can imagine,"
Professor McGonagall said with little patience.
"Harry Potter!"
"Harry Potter?" Hermione looked up at the man curiously.
"Is that someone famous?"
Ollivander stared at her as though she were speaking another language.
"Read this one," Professor McGonagall said to Hermione, pointing to her copy of Great Wizarding Events of the 20th Century. "As excited as we all are that Harry Potter has returned to the wizarding world, Mr. Ollivander, this young witch needs a wand, and we haven't all day."
"Yes, yes," Ollivander grinned. "New wand, you say?"
He turned back to look at the young witch curiously, as though he were looking for something but was unable to figure out exactly what.
"Are you—"
"Yes, a new wand,"
Professor McGonagall snapped impatiently.
"This is Hermione Granger. She'll be starting Hogwarts this year."
"Do you know why he's acting weird?"
"Do I ever know why anybody is doing anything?"
"Fair. So, Ollivander remembers every single wand that he's ever sold, right?"
"Yes."
"Like, he actually says that in the first movie and book. He remembers selling Maya Potter her wand. And he can tell kind of just by looking at someone what kind of wand they need. Like, he takes measurements, but he is pretty good at measuring somebody up and figuring out
what they need." Now he's doing what McGonagall did. He's like, "Huh?"
"Yes. Okay. Now, she hasn't noticed me not charm, which is why most people won't be able to recognize her. But Ollivander isn't just looking at her face. He's looking at her magical core. And I know this was all the way back in book one, book two. When Maya gets her wand, he goes to offer her the wand she had as Hermione Granger. But she doesn't want it because she doesn't want to buy it now, because then she can't buy it in the future. So what she gets is the sister wand to her wand. It's still Willow, I think it was Willow. It's still got a unicorn hair, but it's a different wand. I think it's Dragonheart string or unicorn hair. Hey guys, had to take a quick break because my child woke up, but we are going to dive back into the debt of time. I am now better armed in a hoodie because I was shivering last time because it's fucking cold in Tennessee. It's 32 degrees outside right now. I am freezing my ass off. I did make the mistake of complaining to my husband about that, and he's working in an open garage. So, joke's on him. He's cold all the time. But let's sit. That is not the book we were reading. We are not reading All the Wrong Things. I am rereading All the Wrong Things because I love them. But it is time now to pick up. We were at Ollivander's, and I had just explained to you that Ollivander was confused as to why Hermione needed a new wand, considering he already sold her a wand in 1971. But McGonagall is like, yes, a new wand, because Hermione does not know about Maya yet. So Ollivander looked at her as if he were shaking off a lingering, unspoken thought.
Yes, yes, of course. Hold out your arm. That's it.
I have no idea what my Ollivander voice was before the break, so we're just going to play with this. He measured Hermione from shoulder to finger, then wrist to elbow, shoulder to floor, knee to armpit, and round her head. As he measured, he said to her,
"Every Ollivander wand has a cord of magical
At practice. Okay, you know what, Rinny Chin Chin over there, stop laughing at me.
It's okay, I couldn't do any better.
I even have the dyslexia font. It's just my mouth.
It's just because you're not my peoples, so it doesn't work for you. You have to be the people.
I'm trying, man.
It discriminates. It's wrong, but
it only works for dyslexic people, not people who just stumble over words. Great.
Yes.
The issue's the mouth, not the eyes.
Ooh. Yep.
Anyway.
That sounded wrong.
That's right. I was like, it wasn't actually a dirty connotation, but I feel like there was still a dirty connotation. So I'm going to take a sip of my spiced cranberry limeade with a splash of 7-Up, and then I'll restart.
It's kind of like calling someone a butterface. It's like, it's not the mouth, it's the eyes.
Ooh, rude. Rude.
I wasn't calling it. I'm just general. By the way, your McGonagall voice reminds me of, I can't remember her name, but I think we met her in season 5 of Outlander, the blind one. I think she's like Jamie's aunt or something.
Yes, Jocasta.
Yeah, that's what you sound like when you read McGonagall. Yeah.
Fucking love Jocasta. That actress actually played Catherine of Aragon, Henry VIII's first wife in The Tudors.
Okay.
Fucking incredible actress. Her name's, I think, Maria Kennedy, something like that. But she's phenomenal, and I was very excited to see her in Outlander.
By the way, did you see the new opening
for next
season? Yeah, they posted it on Facebook. It's actually pretty good. It's like a duet this time, so it's like a guy and some chick like singing together. It's so good.
I'm excited. So good. I actually sing that to JD, except I sing it properly. It's Sing Me a Song of a Lad Who Has Gone, because it's about the fucking dumbass they were fighting for at Culloden. Oh, frippery little sort. But anyway. Every Ollivander wand has a core of a magical powerful magical substance. Why do I keep fucking that up? Every Ollivander wand has a core of a powerful magical substance, Miss Granger. We use unicorn hairs, phoenix tail feathers, and the heartstrings of dragons. No two Ollivander wands are the same, just as no two unicorns, dragons, or phoenixes are quite the same. And, of course, you will never get such good results with another witch's wand. The wand maker then turned to the shelves, letting his hand hover around the boxes for several moments before he paused, looked back at Hermione, and then said, while tapping his index finger against his chin. Finally, he walked into the back and returned with a long box in his hand. He removed the small wand from the box and held it out to her. As Hermione took it, a warmth filled her fingers like soft bath water. She grinned. "This feels good." "Ah, wonderful. Ollivander smiled. 10¾-inch vine wood with the core of dragon heartstring, he explained. And Hermione stared at the man excitedly. Also, I was dead fucking wrong earlier. I said she was unicorn hair and willow. I have no idea whose fucking wand that is. Clearly not Hermione's. Watch, she's gonna go
Draco. That's probably mine, because I'm a unicorn. So, it's mine.
Okay, in that case, that means maybe Lily's was the willow and dragon heartstring, because I know the dragon they got it from gave 3 heartstrings, and it was Hermione, Maya, and Lily. They all got the same dragon.
By the way, how does Hogwarts find these kids? Like, how do they decide who gets a letter? And how do they find Hermione? Like, because since she's, like, not, she's a muggle-born, like, how do they, like, find magic people and, like, non-magic people?
Super complicated.
Or whatever I'm trying to say.
It's called magic.
Oh my god. I hate how every time I ask a question, you always say it's magic.
No, but literally, I believe...
You sound like that chick at Harry Potter World when I was there. This little girl, I'm eating ice cream, and this little girl is staring at me, and she's like, do you know when the dragon does the fire? And I'm like, no, Google says it's every 10 minutes, but I asked somebody and she says that the dragon does it whenever it wants to and there's no telling. And she's like, oh, and looked really sad. So then her mom asks an employee who's sweeping up next to us and goes, hey, when's the dragon do its thing? And the lady looks at her and goes, we had to give the dragon its allergy medicine. It's allergic to people, and walks away. And I'm just like, that was helpful. And the mom is just like, okay. Then the dark wizard's like, I think that means it's broken because we've been here a long time and it hasn't done it at all. And I was mad because he's never seen it. Because he didn't realize that Harry Potter World was both sides of the park. So he had never been on that side.
No shit.
And it never did it. And I was like, I guess it's broken.
That's fucking hilarious.
I know. I'm just like, oh, it's allergic to people, huh?
That's cute.
Right. But how do they find them? Seriously.
So that's where I was going. So in the Ministry of Magic, there is a magical register. And every time a magical child is born, it writes down the child's name, date of birth, and location. And that location updates as the kid moves, because magic. But that is how they trigger the Hogwarts letters.
Okay.
And it's also how they track down Muggleborns.
Oh, okay.
And the running, like, so when Voldemort took over the ministry, obviously, they went through and destroyed all the Muggleborn records from anyone born. So basically anybody who wasn't at Hogwarts yet. So he took over at the end of...
If you can't remember, it's okay, because you've explained this to me before with something else, but it had nothing to do with
it. But yeah, so essentially everybody born between like the late 80s and 1998, if they were Muggleborn, they got wiped. So everybody was like, you could be a wizard if you were born between like 1988 and 1998. And so those of us who were 90s babies are like, I could have gotten my letter, but I won't because Voldemort burned up my records.
So that's why we didn't get letters? Yeah. That bastard.
Now, ironic, because we live in the States and wouldn't have gone to Hogwarts anyway. We would have gone to Ilvermorny, and Voldemort wasn't here to destroy the record. So it really only applies to children born in Britain. But.
Wait, there's a Hogwarts in the States?
Ilvermorny.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Woman, did you not watch Fantastic Beasts?
I watched the first one once and the second one once.
Ilvermorny is the American school. Unlike... Okay. Hogwarts, I think you choose your house. It's different. It's not divvied up by like smart kids, brave kids, chill kids, and conniving kids. It's like, who's got an adventurous spirit? Who's got there's like horned serpent and thunderbird and a bunch of other stuff. You can test for it on Pottermore and read up on the lore and that kind of stuff. But anyway, so does that explain your question as to how they know where Muggleborns are?
Yeah, I was just wondering like how they know these things, because I was just like, yes, it is probably some form of magic, but there has to be more to it than that.
Short answer, magic. Long answer, Ministry of Magic's magical register.
Man, that'd be so much easier than having to, like, send a text for the census every year or every 10 years. It's just like, yo, somebody was born. And just register, like, just register. It's, like, perfectly accurate all the time. God, that'd be so much easier.
Yeah, or it's like when Prince George was born, just put the plaque outside the castle and just be like, here is his name and all the information, read, go.
Speaking of the royal kids, I always liked the name Charlotte. And for the record, I know Charlotte is very trendy right now. I picked out Charlotte after reading Charlotte Doyle by Avi in the 8th grade. So, like, I have had this on my radar for well over 15 years. But Jimmy didn't like it because he didn't like the idea of calling a little girl Charlie. So I thought he just didn't like Charlotte. Turns out he does actually really like the name Charlotte. He just doesn't like Charlie. So just like I was like, I like the name James. We're not calling him fucking Jimmy. So, and he agreed to that one, which he was good with. He was like, he didn't like the big, well, I don't know that he didn't like
it. But people call him that.
Well, people also called his dad that. And it was Big Jimmy, Little Jimmy.
Okay.
And people still call him Little Jimmy. And he's like, my dad's gone and I'm not a small person. Like, yeah, I'm built like a refrigerator.
To me, that's more nostalgic because before I went to Memphis, I got the TSA pre-check thing and you have to like go to this place where they like check you and everything and like ask you all these questions and everything. By the way, it's totally worth it if you haven't done it. It's good for 5 years and it's worth
it. What is it?
You don't have to, the TSA pre-check, you don't got to take your shoes off. You don't got to do nothing. They just look at you and gone. But anyway, so this guy in front of me, he was a junior and on the paperwork, it said that he was a junior and the lady goes, is this how you want your name? And he was like, no, my dad died years ago and I dropped the junior. And I'm just like, Muggle, why would you do that? Like, go suck it. That's so sad. I kind of hate it when people do stuff like that because it's like, I get you're not a little person, but it's also kind of like,
whatever the word is I'm looking for to me. He's still a junior. He's just, he's like, why are you still calling me Little Jimmy? Like, we don't have a Big Jimmy to differentiate me from. But I wanted JD to sort of have his own, because everybody always talks about how much Jimmy is just like his dad. And yeah. I'm like, and that's awesome. Like, his dad was a good dude. Jimmy's a really good dude. But I want JD to have an opportunity to build his own persona without everybody just assuming he's going to be, you know, a carbon copy of his dad. I'll be thrilled if he's a carbon copy of his dad. Jimmy is hands down, no questions asked, like, the best man I have ever fucking met. Like, wonderful. Besides the fact that he ruined Christmas. But no, he's awesome. And I'd be thrilled if my son grew up to be like him. But I also want him to have an opportunity to be his own person. But
yeah, which I totally understand, because that's how the Dark Wizard is, because him and his dad have the same first and middle name. So it's like, it's always, it's always Big and Little with them too. So it's like, whatever.
Yeah. And the Dark Wizard is not little either.
No, he is not.
We like our men looking like refrigerators. They give the best hugs. But anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. We do have to. Oh my God. This episode's going to have so many fucking tangents. I'm so sorry, guys. Actually, no, I'm not. We've been really short on tangents the last couple of episodes simply because there was a lot of shit, important shit going on, and there was a lot of gravitas. So now it's a little more laid back. It's a little more loosey goosey. And so we're going to enjoy this. And we're going to also, we don't have Hannah Beth to yell at us. So, ha.
Right.
Anyway,
and now that some of us are in a little bit of a better mood, now that we're physically feeling a little bit better most days, it's fine.
Yes, yes.
Not to make it about me, but I'm doing better.
Well, no, it was like I was dealing with a new baby. Hannah Beth was dealing with the end of pregnancy, and you were dealing with your health stuff, which is up to up to you whether or not, like, what level of detail you want to release. But I know
I don't care. I joined a vaccine support group on Facebook, and I told these people what happened to me, and like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't talk about it, and they also don't report it on the news because they want you to get it, so they don't want to freak people out, which I get because I still want people to get it, even though I had a reaction because it's the only way it's going to keep people like me safe.
Yeah.
But like, Jesus H. Christ, We were finally seeing the light, and now the light
must be dimming. This is just going to keep happening until everybody gets fucking vaccinated, unfortunately.
Yes, and where's their mother effing mask?
Yes.
Which I was really mad about at Harry Potter World, because I double mass and this woman walks past me with her husband and her two boys. And her boys are like 10 or 11. Like, they're decent sized kids, you know? So she looks at me and she goes, "I appreciate the double masking." And then when she walks away, I'm like, "But yet your husband and both your kids weren't wearing one and you were only wearing one."
Yeah.
I also gave our business card to a Harry Potter Park employee.
Yay!
Yeah, because she read my mask and she was like, "What?" And then I explained to her what the story was about, like, a little bit. And she goes, "Hermione does what?" So I gave her a business card and she says that she writes Glee fan fiction.
Yeah. I love flan fiction. I can't fucking talk.
The Dead of Time.
Anyway, the Dead of Time. Dragon heartstring? Yes, Miss Granger, very powerful. The dragon that donated the heartstring for your wand was an old Ukrainian iron belly. It donated 3 strings in total quite some years ago. One I used for a willow wand. Aha! I was right! Oh, shit. Hope I didn't wake the baby. That I sold to a young muggle-born girl just like you, he said, holding back tears in his eyes. Oh. Okay, we're going to say that different. One I used for a willow wand that I sold to a... Oh, crap. No, I can't re-record it because I did the yes, and I'm not going to redo that. That I sold to a young muggle-born girl just like you, he said, holding back tears in his eyes as though he were reflecting on the witch in question. And another vine wood I sold that same year, just a bit shorter than this. The girl who bought it was... He smiled thoughtfully as he looked her over, a strange confusion in his eyes. Eventually he shook his head and cleared his throat. Both were quite amazing witches. Hermione was grinning madly as she held her wand delicately in her fingers. September 6th, 1991. Seamus Finnegan, Professor Snape drawled as he went over the roll, just as each professor had done in the rest of her classes. Here... Like, roll call.
The list of students. Oh, names. Because it's from Hermione's point of view. Yes. I was like, is that a typo?
No.
Okay, never mind.
Here. Gregory Goyle.
Here.
Hermione Granger.
Present,
Hermione said, raising her hand, immediately drawing the professor's attention. Black eyes fell on her, and suddenly she felt as though she'd done something wrong. The professor stared at her, a look of concentration on his face as though he were trying to place her. After a moment, his gaze drew away from her, though he had a sudden sneer fixed to his face. As his focus moved on to the next name on the list, Professor Snape reached a hand up and subconsciously rubbed at his jaw as though it ached. That part always cracks me up because Maya fucking punches him. Snape's eyes drew back to the list, where his gaze narrowed further.
Ah, yes, he said softly. Harry Potter, our new celebrity.
Hermione turned to look at Harry. He had been nice to her on the train, despite his red-headed friend being a bit of a prat, and Hermione couldn't help but feel a little bad for him over all the unwanted attention he was receiving. She'd read up on his story in Modern Magical History, The Rise and Fall of the Dark Arts, and The Great Wizarding Events of the 20th Century. And despite the fact that the books all focused on Harry's supposed defeat of you-know-who, Hermione couldn't help but feel the grief over everything that boy had lost.
You are here to learn the subtle science and exact art of potion making,
Professor Snape began. Hermione focused her entire attention on him, eager to begin her studies under an actual potions master.
As there is little foolish wand waving here, many of you will hardly believe this is magic. I do not expect you will really understand the beauty of the softly simmering cauldron with its shimmering fumes, the delicate power of liquids that creep through human veins, bewitching the mind, ensnaring the senses.
Namaste. This has been yoga with Snape.
I can teach you how to bottle fame, brew glory, even put a stopper in death. If you aren't as big a bunch of dunderheads as I usually have to teach. Potter, he said suddenly, what would I get if I added powdered root of asphodel to an infusion of wormwood? Draft of living death, Hermione thought excitedly as her hand shot in the air. Harry and Ron showed a confused look that caused Hermione to roll her eyes. Eventually, the black-haired boy answered, I don't know, sir. Snape's lips curled into a sneer. Tut, tut. Fame, clearly, isn't everything.
Muggle, it's not his fault. You're just picking on him because you're mad that his mama didn't love you. Shut up.
Hermione continued holding her hand up high, but Professor Snape ignored her.
Let's try again. Potter, where would you look if I told you to find me a bazaar?
The stomach of a goat, Hermione stretched her hand back into the air as high as it would go.
I don't know, sir, Harry replied. Thought you wouldn't open a book before coming, eh, Potter?
Hermione's hand quivered in the air.
What is the difference, Potter, between monkshood and wolfsbane?
Nothing, they're the same plant! She shrieked inside of her head, and then actually stood up, her hand stretching towards the dungeon ceiling.
I don't know, said Harry quietly. I think Hermione does, though. Why don't you try her?
Yes, yes, ask me, I know it!
Sit down,
Snape snapped at Hermione. Snape snap, Snape snap, Snape snap. Sorry.
You haven't watched The Office, so you won't understand this, but you have no idea the I can't remember it exactly. It's like the trauma of three vasectomies have on a man. Snip, snap, snip, snap, snip, snap. Anyway.
Hermione fell into her chair, a frown over... Yeah. Hermione fell into her chair, a frown overtaking her face as she looked down at her open potions book, silently wondering what the heck she'd ever done to Professor Snape to earn such disdain from the man, while she quietly began her brew and listened closely as Professor Snape continued to berate Harry and Neville. Hermione couldn't help but wonder if she'd made the right choice in coming to this school. Less than 1 week in, and she'd already angered one of her professors, hadn't made a single friend, and half of her own house couldn't stand to be around her. She wondered to herself if she even really belonged in the wizarding world. Suddenly, a hissing cloud of acid green smoke filled the dungeon. Hermione darted a glance to the side, where Neville, Seamus, Harry, and Ron were moving quickly away from their table. Seamus's melted cauldron spewed their destroyed potion across the floor. As the liquid touched the first set of shoes, melting them, everyone jumped onto their stools to avoid it. Hermione frowned as she heard Neville crying in the corner, wincing as red boils sprang up over his limbs. Probably added the porcupine quills before taking the cauldron off the fire, she thought to herself.
Idiot boy, Snape snarled as he cleared away the mess, glaring down at poor, frightened Neville. I suppose you added the porcupine quills before taking the cauldron off the fire.
Hermione briefly smirked to herself. Maybe she was exactly where she belonged.
Or maybe everybody's just learning, so maybe you should just calm your, whatever's there.
I was about to say, she's 11. Or 12. There's nothing there yet.
Yeah, but she even gets mad at the Half-Blood Prince where Harry's, like, crushing it instead of cutting it. She's like, but it says to cut!
Yeah, well, if you notice in the... Up until Slughorn takes over, they don't use the books for recipes. Snape always writes it on the board.
Oh, I never noticed that.
Mm-hmm. That's because he is tweaking things, which is why when they switch to using the textbooks, Hermione suddenly isn't doing well, and Harry, using Snape's old textbook, is doing just as well as everybody always did.
Wow, okay.
So. June 20th, 1992. So this is, I guess, the end of their first year. One mountain troll, a three-headed dog, a baby dragon, a giant chess set, and two new best friends later, Hermione Granger was thrilled to be a witch. Granted, her current level of excitement sprang from the news that not only had she passed her end-of-year exams, but she had the highest scores of her entire year. Harry and Ron were just pleased to have not been kicked out, but winning the House Cup was an incredible bonus. Oh, and surviving an attack by you-know-who. The three friends gathered on the back of the Hogwarts Express, sharing stories and chocolate frogs. I don't know what voice I want to do for Ron.
I got Armando Dippet,
Ron stated, showing off his card before practically swallowing the chocolate frog whole. He used to be headmaster of Hogwarts before Dumbledore.
Professor Dumbledore, Hermione corrected as she opened up her copy of Hogwarts, a history.
Why are you always reading that thing, Hermione?
Ron asked. Hermione made a face.
Don't call me that. I don't like nicknames, she informed him. And I'm always reading it because it's my favorite book. You don't understand because you grew up in a wizarding family, but when I found out I was a witch, it was like all the missing pieces of my life started fitting into a place. I feel like a puzzle, and this book has helped show me what the final picture should be when I'm all put together.
Harry nodded.
I know how you feel.
Hermione smiled.
You both are two of the same pieces, she explained. Just two pieces of the big puzzle that is Hermione Granger, muggle-born witch, she said proudly as she flipped the page of her book. It's just amazing to see the history that Hogwarts has. Even this train has an incredible history. Did you know that it's over 150 years old?
Looks like it,
Ron chuckled as he noted the scratch marks all along the door of their carriage. Hermione turned to observe the marks that had been placed over the many years, shaking her head in disappointment. At the very top of the doorway, carved in strangely elegant script for vandalism, read, Marauders only. All others will be cursed. She rolled her eyes dramatically until her focus fell to a pair of initials instead of a heart scratched into the wall near her seat. SB plus MP. Hermione pursed her lips, returning her attention back to her book, muttering,
So disrespectful.
Muggle, you did that.
I mean, honestly, it was probably Sirius more than Maya, but yes.
All right.
And that is the end of our season 7. Premiere. Season 7.
Yeah. Crazy.
Wild. So, how are we feeling?
Well, I started out really mad and then I got confused and I'm still more confused, obviously, but...
Yeah, but it's... We are now back in the beginning before even book one started. We're at the beginning where we started with the Harry Potter series, which is kind of fun. But, all right, well, without further ado, let's go ahead and thank our patrons.
Since we gave Hannah Beth the month of November off, and we had 2 weeks off from recording and releasing episodes during November, we are going to do our November Patreons today. And we will do our December patrons starting next week. That way everybody gets recognized. Woo! And we don't miss anybody. So, our newest dogs, stags, and wolves, we would like to thank Julia, Mrs. Lundqvist, Lexaplexa, Annalisa, Victoria, Rebecca, Paulina, Gina, Olivia, Hannah Marie, and Emily. To our November foxes, we'd like to thank Lisa, Tyler, Anthony, Tim Tams or Trash, fight me, I will. Jade, Tori, Leanne, Stacy, Carolyn, Sierra, Camille, Miriam, Shannon, Sandra, Martina, Claire, Nicole, Lynn, Kenny, Ryland, Jackie, Amber, Sarah, Muggle Trucker, Matthias Potter, yes, really, Carissa, Kaylin, April, Olivia, Rachel, Chelsea, Sarah, Amara, Cassie, Cauldron Mist, Laura, Audrey, Melissa, Amanda, Tori, Darian, Nina, Sylvia, Ryder, Crystal, Natasha, Misha, Rebecca, Dan, Jillian, Katie Cat, Kendra, Ash, Chris, Shauna, Catherine, Becky, Montana, Paige, Kara, Michelle, Frau Holly, Roshan, and Tanya. And thank you so much again to all of our new December patrons. We're so happy to have you. And we will see you guys next.
Fire Whiskey Friday.
Whatcha!
Thank you for listening to another episode of Fire, Whiskey, and Honey.
A special thank you to Shyalani for allowing us to read your story.
And thank you to Blue Ivy Creations for creating our logo and Hannah Beth for editing our episodes.
You can find us on Instagram at FWHpod.
And on Twitter at FWHpodcast.
And on our website, FWHpod.com.
If you enjoy this podcast and would like to support and get extra content, please support us on Patreon and review us on Apple Podcasts.
Thank you to those who support us already. We wouldn't be here without you.
See you next Fire Whiskey Friday.